Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Good morning again, everyone. As Bill de Blasio and his allies in the city council try to address the tale of two cities, here's a stat that highlights what we might call the tale of two housing courts. 90% of tenants facing an eviction do not have legal representation in New York City's housing courts, while 98% of landlords do. Councilmember Mark Levine is proposing legislation that would close that gap. He represents the 7th District, which runs from 96th Street to 165th Street on the west side of Manhattan, including Morningside Heights, Hamilton Heights, West Harlem, and more. Councilman Levine, welcome back to WNYC.
Thank you so much, Brian. It's a pleasure to be here.
Want to start with that stat about the gap in representation. Is there not a right to an attorney in housing court?
Absolutely. You know, people who only get their information from television dramas might actually be under the impression that you have a right to an attorney in any court. But, of course, that's only extended to you in criminal court. And in civil court, whether it's an eviction proceeding, foreclosure, immigration court, family court with child custody, a dispute over government benefits, if you don't have the money for a lawyer, you're on your own. And in housing court, this problem is particularly insidious because you mentioned the stats, 90% of tenants are representing themselves. New York State housing law is renowned for being Byzantine. Even lawyers find housing court complicated. If the tenant's representing themselves, they are at a severe disadvantage. And landlords know this, so the most unscrupulous among them will not hesitate to haul tenants into housing court, even if charges are weak, because tenants will be at a disadvantage in that arena, and some might just get intimidated and leave their apartments out of fear. So we propose legislation which would help to level this playing field. I should mention that my colleague, Councilmember Vanessa Gibson from the Bronx, is a co-sponsor. And we would provide an attorney. The government would pay for an attorney for anyone in housing court who is earning, who is poor or near poor, earning 125% of the poverty level. Also, should mention that my colleague Rosie Mendez has a companion bill that would focus on providing attorneys to seniors. And in fact, this fight has been going on for decades, Brian, almost since the moment back in 1963 in a very famous Supreme Court case in which the right to attorney was provided in criminal court. Activists have been trying to get this right extended to civil court, but have been unsuccessful till now. For a variety of reasons, I think we can do it today, though.
Listeners, we want your stories of your day in housing court, particularly if you were not represented by a lawyer and the other side was. But anybody may call 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. But, Councilman, on this idea that the government should guarantee an attorney in civil court, the Supreme Court's argument, I believe, for granting a right to a lawyer in a criminal case but not in civil cases, is that the restriction of physical liberty, meaning going to prison, is a much higher stake. Are you arguing that the consequences of being evicted are similar to the consequences of being jailed?
Well, look, I'm not going to argue the legal end of this, but I'll tell you from a public policy perspective, the epidemic of evictions in this city is deadly serious, and it's intimately intertwined with the homeless crisis. We're now at record levels, which you've covered extensively on your show. There are now 28,000 people who are being evicted every year through housing court proceedings. That number has been steadily rising. In fact, it was 23,000 back in 2006, and there are many, many thousands more who opt to leave their apartment at some point during the legal proceedings before an order is executed for marshals to evict. They do it out of fear or frustration. So this problem is serious, and it's contributed undeniably to homelessness. In fact, one-third of the people coming into city shelters are coming directly off an eviction, and the vast majority of them did not have any legal representation. So from the perspective of public policy, I think this is not only a humane step, but also good for all of us in New York to deal with a crisis which affects everybody.
And you point out in your legislation language that of the 30,000 evictions a year, in two out of three cases, tenants make less than $25,000 a year. But isn't that sort of by definition who gets evicted, people who can't afford to pay their rent?
Absolutely. This is why this problem must be dealt with. We should also mention that 60% of tenants in housing court are parents of young children. So this is affecting a broad cross-section of New Yorkers. And to ask someone to defend themselves in housing court is simply unfair. And having legal representation completely changes the game for tenants. Often their disputes are not even with the landlord. It might be a problem of accessing government benefits. Often these are individuals who are back on their feet after a period of unemployment or illness and are able to pay the rent, just need a professional who can negotiate terms with the landlord. It doesn't necessarily take a lot of resources to help someone in a critical way in housing court. And I think for low-income New Yorkers, we have an obligation to do that.
Let me push back on that with a comment from our comments page. Ken writes, most tenants don't have lawyers because they know they have no case. They didn't pay the rent, and now they're being evicted. Why pay a lawyer if you know you're going to eventually lose, since most eviction cases are the simple non-payment of rent cases?
There are all sorts of reasons why people wind up in eviction cases. One of the most common is thousands of cases a year are disputes over succession rights. And there the law gets complicated, and you certainly need an attorney. There are cases in which tenants have gone on rent strike because landlords have deprived their building of essential services. Should that person be evicted? The court should decide that. And to leave someone to their own devices means they're not going to be able to make that case effectively. I think it's simply untrue and unfair to say that any tenant against whom eviction proceedings are started is simply unworthy of legal representation, and that is a foregone conclusion that they'll lose their home.
We saw a stat in the Times that backs up your argument to a degree. It was a 2012 randomized experiment in Quincy, Massachusetts, described here, involving 129 participants, and it showed that two-thirds of tenants who were offered full representation in these cases avoided eviction, compared with one-third who were offered limited assistance, like instructional clinics. So having legal representation does seem to change the outcome for a significant percentage of people in roughly the same circumstances.
Indeed. And advocates have been making this case for years. And I'll tell you, this is also a good investment. We're still waiting for cost analysis from the City Council's legislative division. We'd estimate the cost at about $20 million a year, although I caution that's really more of a guess at this point. But if you look at what we're spending on homeless services, it's approaching $1 billion a year, over $900 million. It wouldn't take the prevention of too many cases of homelessness to pay for this. We're spending $30,000 a year per individual in our shelter system. California, which has a limited law providing such attorneys in housing court, has put the cost at about $1,200 per case. So this could be a real bargain for the taxpayer, and one of the reasons why I think the fiscal environment is right to make it happen now.
Paul in Manhattan, you're on WNYC with City Councilman Mark Levine. Hi, Paul.
Hi, how are you, Brian?
Okay.
I just wanted to disagree with a comment that you have just read. Being a practicing attorney in New York, although not in the housing court, before being admitted, I would be volunteering in the housing court. Basically, I would be assigned to one of the boroughs for a day and under supervision of an attorney appointed by the court, I would be representing tenants for a day. It's called the limited appearance for a day. It's a counsel for a day program. And anyone could come in on a date of the appearance and ask for representation. And I assure you, they were given representation. There were experienced attorneys as well as law students working for on their behalf. And I got to say that from my experience, 90% of the cases that I would be dealing with, they would be resolved on day of the appearance, and they would be resolved in a way of a settlement. That would be payment of money in arrears, basically rent that one would owe. Over time, repairs, a lot of repairs by the landlords that would have to be done. And this number, 98% of people that are not represented, And the high number of people being evicted is shocking to me, because anyone in five boroughs could get a representation if they cannot afford it.
So, Councilman Levine, what do you say to Paul and the experience that he's had as an attorney?
Well, luckily, there are many attorneys who are doing pro bono work. There are law firms providing pro bono services in housing court. There are a patchwork of legal service entities, which are also doing so. And there are a couple of very small city programs through the Department for the Aging and the Department for Homeless Services, which are providing these services. But add them all up, it doesn't come anywhere near meeting the demand. Legal Aid of New York estimates they turn away 8 out of 9 tenants who come to them for assistance in housing court. There are over 200,000 cases a year referred to housing court. The numbers are just huge. And the volunteers and small government programs which exist today are simply inadequate, which is why in the end the vast majority of tenants end up representing themselves, which is unfair and unacceptable.
Paul, do you have reason to believe that the program that you were involved in which it sounds like you only represented these tenants for one day as a volunteer, and I may have to go because the scratchiness on your line is pretty distracting. But, Paul, do you have evidence to believe that this is a very widespread program and so that this 98% figure that the city councilman keeps citing is bogus, that many more tenants in housing court really do have some kind of legal representation?
I believe tenants have representation. I applaud the idea. Don't get me wrong. I applaud the idea, and anyone should have a choice of representation. Although it is hard for me to believe that only 2% of people can afford a representation or would seek representation. If you seek representation, right now, a bar association, for example, is doing anything they can to provide representation to people that are indigent or even they can afford representation, mm-hmm. but they are, for some reason, not having representation at the day of appearance. So basically, I applaud the idea, although if you want to be represented and you want your case resolved, you are really able to get help right now in housing court because right. it's so important. We as attorneys recognize that as very, very, very important matter for anyone. And there is representation out there. Just go and find out. County clerk will direct you to the council for a day.
Paul, in the meantime, that's good advice while this bill is being debated. And thank you very much for sharing your experience and that advice for people who want representation today in housing court. Let's take a call from a landlord. Here's Ken in the Bronx. Hi, Ken. You're on WNYC with Councilman Levine.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. Just a couple of things to consider. The councilman might want to understand that by making it more difficult to evict a non-paying tenant, he is sending the message to landlords that they should not rent to poor people. Okay? If someone has a hard luck story and I give them a chance, he is punishing me by making the eviction more difficult. So what I must do is ask for richer tenants who can put up bigger deposits and who have stronger credit references.
Councilman?
Second, he should consider that. Yes, okay. Second, you should consider that, yes, if you give tenants lawyers, they will be more likely to win cases. You mentioned the study in which it went from 2/3 to 1/3 of eviction. What that basically means is that the cost of housing the non-paying tenant has been transferred to the landlord instead of going to the homeless system. Now, that might not be the public policy outcome that you really want, because eventually the landlords are going to have to make up for it by charging more rent. Okay.
All right, let's hang on that one. Ken, hang on. Don't go away. But let's drill down a little bit on that second point. Councilman Levine, is that what your bill would in effect do? Shift the burden of paying for tenants who can't afford their rent from the public at large, because then they'd go into the homeless system, to private landlords?
No. I disagree with Ken's statements on several levels. First of all, Ken, be careful. If you have wealthy tenants, they're going to be able to hire top-notch lawyers, and you may end up spending even more litigating against them in housing
court. But they're going to be able to afford their rent, is his point.
Well, look, there's many other reasons why people land in housing court, as I mentioned, and it doesn't snare wealthier tenants as well.
Most is non-payment of rent. That's 90%.
Right, but the essential point here is that people have a right to housing, and that furthermore, many of the tenants that are winding up in housing court are in rent-stabilized units, and so the law sets out clear rules on what can be charged. It's not up to the discretion of the landlords to raise it because of their fear of legal action. And furthermore, the system is currently being distorted because landlords know, landlords who are I'm sure less scrupulous than Ken, know that they can haul tenants in housing court even when their case is weak, because they'll be so unlikely, the tenants will be so unlikely to defend themselves adequately. Look, if someone truly has not paid their rent and the law's on the landlord's side, then that person will be out of their apartment, and that's as it should be. But on the margins, there are thousands of tenants who are getting caught in a system which doesn't give them a fair shot, and that's what we're trying to change.
Make your third point, Ken.
Do you have any statistics that there are tenants who are paid up in their rent yet are still being evicted, and how many are there, or is this anecdotal?
We'll get back to you on the stats, but I can tell you there are many people caught up in succession cases, and there are people who wind up fighting with landlords over faulty services, lack of heat and central appliances and other key factors, which are just as important as rent disputes, and tenants have a right to have a strong voice in fighting for those services.
Ken, thank you for your call. Here is Bob, who says he's an attorney who has represented tenants in housing court. Bob, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Hi, thanks for having me on. One of the things that really hit me, I mean, when I was practicing, I was working for one of those patchwork agencies, a union legal services plan. And, yes, we were able to win a lot of cases because of defects in the landlord's cases, which obviously people without lawyers probably wouldn't be able to pick up on. But, you know, the bigger issue that I always found was that a lot of my clients were very low income, and, you know, they were in rent-stabilized or rent-control apartments, and it seemed the landlords would go out of their way to try to get these people out of these apartments, because clearly they wanted to get them the apartments back so they could do whatever they had to do to get them out of rent control.
Bob, thank you for your call. And you mentioned the rent-stabilized tenants before, Councilman, and the desire of many landlords to get them out, because in many cases, once a current rent-stabilized tenant leaves, the landlord can do some renovations and turn it into a market-rate apartment. But those aren't generally indigent people, are they?
Living in rent-stabilized units?
Yeah.
Well, the majority of people living in rent-stabilized units are indeed poor and working class, for sure. And this is a clear example of why a landlord might want to get a tenant out who is paying their rent every month on time and is a great neighbor and not causing troubles, because the landlord knows if they flip the unit to market rate, they could double or triple the rent. And so some landlords are looking for any pretext to take a tenant to housing court. Perhaps they're alleging illegal boarding. Perhaps they're alleging that the tenant doesn't live in the apartment full time. Perhaps they're disputing succession rights. There are a whole variety of pretexts which landlords can use. And if we had a fair system, then it would discourage landlords from doing that unless they truly had a fair case.
By the way, folks, because somebody on our comments page asked again the name of the program that our caller Paul was referring to, where you can get a lawyer to help you in tenant court. There are various ways, I guess, but the one that he was participating in was the state's Volunteer Lawyer for the Day program. So if that's something that you think you would qualify for or know someone who might benefit from, that's how you can look it up, the Volunteer Lawyer for the Day program, or for a day program in New York State. Here's a housing court story from Matt in Hell's Kitchen. Hi, Matt. You're on WNYC.
Hey, Brian. I had a rent strike case because the conditions were so bad at our apartment, and I got taken to housing court, and it was a nightmare. I was representing myself. It took 7 days. I had to spend 7 days in court over the course of 3 months, because every time I went, the landlord would have a different lawyer there, and we would be starting from ground zero, and then they were pulling all these maneuvers that I didn't understand, so the case kept getting delayed and delayed and delayed, and while it was getting delayed, they were doing everything they could to intimidate me and force me to settle out in the hallway. Finally, I was seen by a judge. I won the case, and this was the kicker. Now I have a scar on my record, and no landlord will take me. So if when you sign up to do a credit check, they can also do a court check, and it comes up that I was in housing court. It doesn't say why. It doesn't say that I won. It just says that I was in housing court, and now no landlord will take me.
Mark Levine?
Such a compelling story. I'm sorry to say it's one I've heard many times. And, Brian, we should do a whole other show on the final issue the caller raised, which is that there are lists maintained of anyone who's – any tenant who's been in housing court. And this is actually discouraging some tenants themselves from initiating housing court cases, even when they have a very strong case. They're worried about getting this black mark on their record. I'd like to see this kind of practice outlawed.
Tell me more about this blacklist, either of you. Does it exist on paper or in a computer file somewhere for landlords to access?
It's the tenant court check, and it's not all landlords do it, but everyone that I've applied to has done it. It's when they do the credit check, they can also do a court check, and I've seen it when it's printed out. It only says that I was in court. It doesn't say why or the outcome.
Yeah, so, Brian, because court proceedings are public, those documents are public, hard for the average person to access and organize, but there are companies now which have made a business of monitoring, accessing, and compiling all this information and selling it to landlords who then use it to, in the worst cases, blacklist tenants who they deem as quote-unquote troublemakers. No matter what the issues of the case were, no matter how justified the case was, the system doesn't have that kind of nuance. It just marks everyone.
Is there any kind of privacy that could be inserted into policy or the law here? I mean, you go to court, that is the very definition of a public proceeding. So I don't know how you prevent it.
Well, we're looking for legislative solutions, and it may be regulating the industry, which is compiling this data, perhaps preventing them from revealing personal information. But it clearly needs to be addressed and quickly.
Matt, good luck out there. And before we wrap up with City Councilman Mark Levine from the west side of Manhattan, from about 96th Street to 165th Street, we've been talking about his bill that would provide legal representation for tenants in housing court if they're too poor to get it for themselves. The stat that he's got is that 98% of tenants in housing court don't have legal representation, while 90% of the landlords do. But before you go, you also happen to be chair of the Parks Committee in City Council, and I wonder if you have a reaction to the selection of Mitchell Silver, that planning official formerly in city government, and he went down to Raleigh, North Carolina for a while. Did you have a say in that choice?
I didn't have a say, but I sure had a reaction, and it was very positive for a number of reasons. One, he's a New Yorker, and he's actually well-known in my district, where he led the planning of what is now a beloved park back in the late 90s and early 2000s, West Harlem Piers on 125th Street and the Hudson River. And we learned in that process that he really values community input and community participation in decision-making, which are values that I certainly want in a parks commissioner. And I had a chance to be at his announcement last Friday, in which he spoke very eloquently about his vision for parks. He's an urban planner, and he spoke about parks as being essential infrastructure in the urban landscape, and spoke about the fact that good parks seamlessly tie with their surrounding neighborhoods. And I tell you, I'm really happy that we're going to have a planner inside City Hall now who's wearing the parks hat, because every time there's a rezoning or a major development project, I want someone with credibility on the inside speaking up for green spaces. And he's going to do that. I think he'll be great.
That's a great point about the knowledge that an urban planner brings to those larger zoning debates and having parks included as part of those conversations. And just since your district includes, areas close to Central Park, since it starts at 96th
yep.
Street, but goes all the way up into Morningside Heights, Hamilton Heights, West Harlem, Washington Heights, lower income districts. I wonder what you think about the controversy over the role of private park conservancies like those for Central Park or the High Line. Do you support that proposal that I think the mayor is backing away from now to require those conservancies to share some percentage of their private fundraising throughout the park system?
You opened this segment by talking about a tale of two court systems. We have a tale of two park systems in this city. there's just a dramatic difference in quality and services and staffing between the marquee parks, the destination parks who have millions of dollars of private money, and the broader system. And the most insidious effect of this two-tiered system is that it's allowed the public parks budget to stagnate. We had our hearing on the budget yesterday. Despite growth in the park system, thousands of acres have been added in recent years, the growth in usage of parks, we're not growing the parks budget in any real sense. And it's partly because many of the city's most influential citizens are living near parks which are extremely well-funded and well-cared for, and so they're simply not as concerned about the public budget. And this is unfair, and it has to change. And
how?
And well, we've got to find a way to bring all parks up. I don't want to make conditions in Central Park or any other park worse, but I think we can find ways to share resources and to the extent that we're not currently doing, but not take our eye off the ball, the broader ball of increasing the public budget, which is the only way to get true adequate funding in every park in New York City.
Well, folks, we've heard from tenants, we've heard from landlords, we heard from City Councilman Levine, and we're hearing from a lot of you on our comments page, so if you want to go follow up on this, join the conversation there, or just read what others are posting, go to WNYC.org and click on Brian Lehr's show about the housing court legislation. Councilman Levine, thanks for coming on.
Thank you, Brian. A pleasure.